All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Feedback. Okay, welcome to the Board of West Covina Unified School District Board of Education regular meeting, March 8th, 2011 at 6 o'clock in the evening. We'll call the meeting to order. Before we go into closed session, is there anybody that would like to comment on any items regarding closed session items? And in closed session, we will discuss the expulsion of a student, public employee, discipline, dismissal, release, transfer, appointment, and then our conference with our labor negotiators regarding California School Employees Association and the California Teachers Association of West Covina. Seeing nobody wanting to discuss, we will go into closed session at 6:02. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the West Covina Unified School District Board of Education regular meeting. This is March 8th, 2011. We have returned from closed session, and we will continue now with our regular session segment of our meeting. This evening, we will start with an invocation led by Cammie, thank you. Unless there's somebody in the public who would prefer to give an invocation this evening. And seeing none, we'll, will you please rise and join us in invocation?
Dear Lord, be with us tonight as we make the decisions that affect the students in our district. We want to say a special thank you for keeping the women's wrestling team safe as they wrestled and protecting them through that. We want to thank you for all the teachers in this district and the extra effort they put forth in teaching our students daily. In his name we pray, amen.
Amen. And you would please join me in the salute to our flag. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Please be seated. Roll call, please. Here.
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 This evening we met in closed session, and I do have an item that I need to report out. Let's see, the following action was taken in closed session on March 8th, 2011. It was moved by Cammie Polis and seconded by Jessica Shoemaker and approved to expel the following student from the school district. Student number 199586, education code 4900, JK and C. Possession of a controlled substance, and the item vote was 4-0 with Mr. Spence absent. The pupil is expelled and will not be eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in her rehabilitation plans. Okay. All right, we have, before we get on to some of the presentations, we do have an obligation to offer a public hearing this evening, and tonight a public hearing is hereby declared open at 7:03 for the purpose of hearing public input on the amendment to the district's initial proposals to the Teachers Association of West Covina for collective bargaining for the 2010-2011 school year. That item is included in our agenda this evening and will be voted on later on. So if there's anybody that has any comments on that item right now, you're certainly welcome to speak. Is there anybody? Seeing none, I will declare the public hearing closed at 7:04, and we will go on with the presentations for this evening. First and foremost, in spite of what I told him this morning at the gym, I am very proud to be board president and be able to have this opportunity to talk a little bit about my friend Mark Taylor, retired commander from the West Covina Police Department. And I especially got to know Mark very well about three or four years ago, about this time in Los Angeles when two of us were incoming presidents to the local Rotary Clubs in West Covina. And Mark and I shared our trials and tribulations with respect to that, and he did an outstanding job in that capacity. So I'll give you that little sidelight as we recognize him this evening as a commander in the West Covina Police Department. As I said, he retired recently, and we just wanted to take this opportunity this evening to thank him and his wife and his family for all that they have given to our students and in as representative to the police department, and thank them very much. Did you have anything else that you wanted to say?
I just wanted to add that whenever we needed help, we could always reach the commander, and he was the first person that would respond in a timely manner, whether it was a student issue, a staff issue, a community issue. He was gave great service to the district, and he will be missed. So we are honored to have him and his family here for this recognition of Mark Taylor. Please come forward.
The plaque says, Mark Taylor, for your service and support to the West Covina Unified School District and the students we serve, March 8th, 2011.
Thank you very much.
Okay, she doesn't want to be introduced. Okay.
She needs to be recognized too. Ms. Wait. Taylor, please come forward.
Come on up.
Thank you. Next item is extra special. a couple of months ago, we had an opportunity to recognize the boys' varsity football team for their accomplishments. But tonight, this is extra special. We are recognizing the West Covina High School girls' wrestling team for their accomplishments in CIF Southern Section State Wrestling Championships. An incredible accomplishment, and we are very, very proud. If I would, Alex Rubalcava, will you please come up? I think he
can do some introductions.
Some introductions and kind of share with us some of the experience and maybe even... Did you coach, Donnie, did you coach that? All right, go ahead.
Good evening, board members. Good evening, superintendent and audience. This is getting very, I'm getting used to this. I like this. This is very nice. I cannot tell you how impressed I am by the faculty and the students and the community at West Covina High School. And what we have before us is another example of just how much of a family they have built and we have built at the high school, and that our focus, although it be academics and achievement and a college-going career environment and culture, we also get to recognize kids and students, student-athletes and their coaches for their success in the wrestling arena in tonight's case. One of the things that impressed me the most about arriving at the high school this year is just how committed the kids and the staff are to what they do. And when I arrive at 6 o'clock in the morning, there are wrestlers practicing. Mm-hmm. And when I leave, sometimes 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, there are wrestlers practicing. And their coaches are there all day, making sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing in terms of being ready for their meets. Another thing that goes unspoken but definitely not unrecognized is what they do to ensure that the kids are succeeding academically and that they're making sure that they're attending to what they need to do in terms of their classrooms and also being good citizens and being good teammates and being good people overall. So I'm going to call up Shirley Stevens and Donnie Stevens, who are the lead program, and they'll talk about their wrestlers in particular. So Shirley and Donnie, come on up.
Well, First of all, I would like to say thank you for the recognition, and thanks to the principal for making our school a special place to begin with. They don't just acknowledge our accomplishments, but they celebrate them, and that's pretty special to us. The night that this all started with a very special night when our boys' team and our girls' team were about 40 miles apart, both competing at CIF championship tournaments, and both teams actually won the CIF title in the same night, came back and celebrated in the gym together. The girls went on and represented Southern California section, the largest section in the state, and dominated the state tournament by more than 50 points. So the record should stand for quite a while, but the girls and the coaching staff and the boys, we run one program together, share the same values, and it's a great deal. I'd like to recognize Sergio Ortiz, our head girls coach. I'd also like to recognize Jesse Jaime. He's a new addition to the program, and he was a big help on both the girls' side and the boys' side this year. So go ahead. And one coach who was pretty special to both programs is Renee Lopez. He could not make it tonight, but Renee's very instrumental in all of our success. Too many boys and girls to introduce individually, but we really appreciate this time you've taken to acknowledge our accomplishment, and you know, can't say thank you enough.
Thanks. On behalf of the Board of Education, to all of you, nice to meet you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We'd like to present to you certificates. Board of Education recognizes West Covina High School girls wrestling team, CIF Southern Section, and state wrestling champions, March 8th, 2011.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And this one's the boys, yeah?
Yeah, no, I meant, but just what you said.
Yeah, for that. Okay. All right, so two. Okay, and all right, we got it. Yeah, boys.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, there we go.
Siobhan.
Wow.
Yeah. Siobhan can show off the state trophy. It's the first ever.
Could we have the girls please stand and be recognized? Please stand. And girls, if you would come up here so that the cameras can get you a nice, pretty picture for our website, and come on forward. And coaches, Ms. Stevens, you too.
Not on the microphone. Okay. No, sorry. Right. Bummer,
you,
but
you.
They are.
I know. My goodness sakes. Do you need to leave? Or?
They need to do the boys next. With the boys.
You're going to break after this.
Thank you very much. Boys, would you please come up? Girls, would you get in the background up here and let the boys come up front now? Come on back, girls. Come on back.
You're all
it's all one family. Okay, let's have the boys in the front.
Trophy up front, huh?
And a round of applause for both teams.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break for the board meeting so we have a chance to share the experience with everybody that's here.
The guys are kneeling, so it looks really good.
We're going to have to get one of those pictures.
Good photo.
From somebody.
Great job. Thank you very much. Congratulations to you. Good luck.
Awesome job.
Congratulations. Great job.
Really
hard work,
good.
I know. Thank you.
You're the one who deserves all the credit.
Yeah.
Well,
thank
awesome.
You so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know.
Let's get, oh, I guess, where'd she go?
Huh? Time to work the room.
No, she went out. All right, we are back in session here shortly, as soon as I get my board members back. Is that, the mic's on?
Yes.
All right, we are back in session. But before we go on, I would like to take a moment to recognize another member of our police department that's here with us this evening. I'd like to introduce our chief of police, Frank Wills. In here, support of Mark is. Commander and that sort of stuff, and Chief, again, we're very pleased, we're honored to be able to recognize Mr. Taylor this evening, but also want to thank you and the entire department for everything that you have done for our schools, and especially for the officers that we have the opportunity to have on our campuses, so that, you know, Mom and Dad and everybody else can feel this that much safer on campus, and we really appreciate everything the department does for us.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you for being here this evening. All right, I don't have anything else to report this evening. Any other Board of Education report? Cammie?
I just wanted to remind everybody of the upcoming event on March 12th, this Saturday, at Glendale High School. And it reads, join leaders and community members from throughout the San Gabriel Valley as we wrestle with the dilemma of educating the next generation. So they've invited different representatives throughout our district to come out and talk about what's happening with the budget. So if you're interested, that's at Glendale High School from 1 to 3 this Saturday. And that's all I have.
Do you have any? Mike? No? All right. Student representatives report.
Okay. So today Casey started. Today was English and tomorrow will be math. And also, the next WASC meeting is March 18th. I think that's next Friday. And it's also going to be a minimum day. And AP test deposits were due last Friday, and the rest of the money is going to be due March 18th as well. And the start of the fifth grading period is today. For activities, FBLA, the Future Business Leaders of America Club, they attended their first sectional, and Jessica Haney, she got first in business communications, and Celine Barrera got eighth in the same thing. And there was 20 to 30 schools and 500 to 600 competing students, and Jessica and Celine will be able to go on to state depending on, like, the funds. And our color guard, their past competition this past weekend was at Valencia, and they got first place. Sure. That's their second consecutive first place this month. And then Dance Trio and All Male, they had the competition at West High. Their Song Palm placed first, Small Military second, Medium Military first, Co-ed Dance third, Co-ed Hip Hop second, Small All Male second, and Large All Male third. And the overall military award went to our Medium Military. And also our pep squad, their competition was at Almonte High School, and our varsity song placed first. And next week we're going to have a fine arts week, and so basically all the fine arts will be performing during lunch, either the gym or in the quad. And so basically like promoting themselves for like next year's tryouts. And let's see, well, you guys know already about our girls and boys wrestling, how well they've done. Mm-hmm. Our Sadies is this Saturday, and Spring Concert Choir is... or the concert is this Thursday. The elections for the new ASB e-board is Thursday, so I'm going to be a lame duck soon, and that's
all right. Thank you very much. All right. Next item on the agenda is items from the floor. We have several people who have requested to speak this evening. First item, first person up is Lloyd Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Board members, first, you know, I would like to say, let everyone know, I don't have an agenda. What I am is an activist who cares what is happening in our city and our school district. I have been involved with our city for a lot of years. I haven't been involved in our school board business for a lot of years because everything has been going along pretty good until lately. I ask about the $40 million bond. How much was spent on Willowwood? And I was told by board member Spence, none of it was spent on the Willowwood. In fact, a little over $8 million has been spent on Willowwood.
I don't think that number is
fine. Well, I also don't like that the school board has given $17 million to Edison Charter School, which could have helped our children in the school district. So tonight, first I would like to thank the superintendent for getting back to me with the questions I asked at the last meeting. Next, I would like to tell this school board I filed a complaint with the district attorney's office in regards to board members Spence and Jimenez. I feel that they are in conflict of interest with the decisions they are making with concerns to the Edison Charter School. Both of the children will benefit directly with the decisions they make concerning this school, something that the rest of the school district's children don't have. They both should abstain when it comes to matters concerning this school. I know their attorney said they weren't in conflict of interest concerning this school. Let me tell you about a West Covina City Planning Commissioner. There was an item before them. This commissioner had concerns about voting on this item. Instead of abstaining, he asked the city attorney, and the attorney said he could vote on this matter. What happened next, the district attorney filed charges on him for a conflict of interest, and he got in a lot of trouble and had to leave the Planning Commission. If both of you feel confident that you are right, then that's your choice. But what I would like to say to board member Jimenez, I would recommend that you abstain on any decisions regarding this school. After the statement you made to me and Glenn Kennedy, after the last board meeting, February 22nd, when we talked at Denny's, we were talking about the Edison School, and you made the statement that you were voting on these matters as a parent, not as a board member, because your child is being at the school. This is a violation of the oath of office you took. Your main concern should be the children of West Covina Unified School District, not a charter school. That isn't open to all the West Covina Unified School children. I would like to have a public record request on the comments I made here tonight, and the response from the two board members, Spence and Jimenez, and how they voted on the Edison agenda. Thank you.
Arlene Zamora.
Good evening. As a parent of two students currently enrolled in West Covina Unified School District, I'm very concerned with school board member Mike Spence spending any amount of time text messaging. I'm even more concerned with those contents. I'm requesting that the school board obtain all incoming and outgoing text messages during the school board meeting during his term be obtained by any legal means necessary and be publicized to the community or interested parties.
Iso Nakasato. Where are you? There you are.
Good evening.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you, thank you. Good evening, board members, superintendent, and students, which is great to see them still here. I'm glad you guys are still here. My name is Iso Nakasato. I'm a field representative for Assembly Member Roger Hernandez. And I want to give you guys my card so you guys can have it, okay? I'm here on the Assembly Member's request. I'm here to gain a little bit more clarity on what's happening at the San Jose Academy. Also, I'm here to share some interesting news. We are going to be having a few upcoming events this Saturday. We are definitely having the Educational Forum in Glendale. No, is it Glendale?
Yeah,
yes, Glendale. So if you guys can definitely make it, it's worth it. Go, okay? There are going to be lots of politicians. It's going to affect your future. Make yourself known and say your piece. Definitely, I recommend advocacy. Also, what we do have is on Thursday, we have free tax services for those who make $49,000 or less, which is a lot of us. And if you would like to get your free tax services done, it's going to be in La Puente. Go ahead and call our offices. Our office phone number is 626-960-4457. It's going to be from 8 in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Free taxes sponsored by John Chang's, state controller's office. So you're in good hands. Also, we're having this Saturday from 10 to noon, we are having the interactive budget address in the city of Azusa. It's going to be at the Senior Center. It's an interactive budget address. So definitely bring your questions. There's a lot of worrying going on. People need a little bit more clarity, a little bit more transparency, a little bit more of explanation of what the budget's going to be doing to our future, all of our future, our parents' future with adult education, redevelopment funds, just K through 12. Just go get some more information. It's free, and make it a family event. But that's about it. Thank you.
All right. That takes us now to the next agenda item, which is our business session, and the organizational item. Item number one is the approval of the agenda and the consent items. This evening on our agenda, item 18 is an information report regarding the construction management facilities, uses, and rental agreements. Since this matter does, and we do have our attorneys that are here this evening, and in deference to their schedules, I would like to discuss that item instead of the last item. I'd like to insert it between items number 7 and 8. So we will go item 7, and then 18, and then item 8. Are there any other changes requested by board members on the agenda?
Can you repeat what you said again?
I'm going to take item number 18, which would have otherwise been the last item on on this section, and place it between items number 7 and 8.
Between 7 and 8.
Mr. Fox, is the attorney going to be speaking to any of the other issues?
Number 17.
Is that going to be moved up also then?
All right, so let's do that then. We'll do 17 and 18 at the same area. Where'd you go?
Okay, so we're doing 17 and 18.
So 17 and 18, thank you, I didn't know that. So we'll do 17 first and then 18. Any other changes? Anything else on consent?
I'd like to take 12 off of consent.
Take
please.
Removal of item 12. Anything else?
I'd like to take items 2, 7, 15.
Item 2, 7.
And 15.
And 15.
I don't know if that changes where you want to put 17 and 18.
Where are we?
25?
So
2.
2,
7, and 15. 15.
No, we'll keep it the way it is. All right. Anything else? Anybody on consent? No? All right. So we have the addition, or to remove from consent item number 2, item number 7, then inserting items number 17 and 18, and then removing consent number 12 and 15. All right. Is there a motion to that, please?
Move as amended.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. It was moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cami Polis, to approve the agenda and consent items as amended for the regular board meeting on March 8th. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion is so ordered, which takes us to item number 2. Mr. Spence, you asked that this come off.
Yeah, I pulled the minutes off again with I'm a little bit confused on how the length keeps growing, but on item page 59, when it talked about the special ed report, I mean, if the purpose, I've been told that the purpose of this is to make sure that we have more transparency by including more information. Ann Hearn was presenting the findings of the review of special education, they actually talked a lot about a different things that we need to look at as a board, different recommendations, concerning Title I, different things like that, and those are things that should have been included in this part as well, not just the brief overview of the staff. But to me, it seems like if we're going to do this to be transparent, we should have included the recommendations they told us we had to look at, like the learning centers, the reviewing some of the funding sources and those kinds of things, as well as the training.
Anybody else? Questions, comments, Cami? No? Okay. And the only thing that I would try to do is to make these as objective as we possibly can and take some of the subjective issues out of the meeting. I don't see that the subjective issues are necessarily relevant. Opinions in that, just a matter of stating facts of what occurred and what was discussed would be sufficient.
I mean, can we include stuff in there that the director, told us to look at different recommendations concerning, special education funding, the pilot programs for the services, et cetera? I mean, is that possible to include in here along with all the other stuff, the training?
We can include recommendations that she had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that she presented, because,
yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. Mr. Cox, if you can indicate which things you want changed.
Which, yeah, I'm just a general statement. I don't have anything in specific as such, but I'm just it was just a general observation. How do we want to do this? You want to come back with changes that he's made, or do you want to approve and then?
Ms. Valentine has, I think, the recommendations in her report today. Is that true? You're going to go over the recommendations that were made by Ms. Hearn?
No, I'm more going to focus on the process for choosing
those recommendations. Okay, so we don't have them here, but we can bring them back.
The recommendations.
How about something like Ms. Hearn recommended several possibilities to improve efficiency in the special education department?
She had cost-saving measures that
so
she recommended.
Well, there's a whole section here, and we're ignoring all her discussion about the SELPA, because we did have a lengthy discussion about the SELPA when she was here. I mean, if we're gonna start including, the whole presentation as part of the minutes, I want the whole presentation as part of it, not just part of it. If we're not going to be brief anymore, I want the whole thing in.
Well, there's no attempt to not be brief. I think the whole attempt is to outline, you know, major points.
Right.
But, you know, again, the reason for the board to review this is to be very specific. But if you don't have before you the recommendations that she made.
I do. If you
okay, then why don't you read them for the record?
It says that.
Wait, just a minute before we do that.
Report here.
Are we trying to restructure this one particular paragraph so that we can get the minutes approved for this evening? Or you want to bring back with some recommendations to changes, and we'll come back and approve the minutes at the next board meeting?
However you'd like to do it. But I brought the report with the recommendations discussed.
No. And so from now on, let's try to get through this process a little bit better. So if there are some recommendations for changes in wording, let's come back with specific changes and specific wordings. And
right. I'm willing to give those now if you want, however you want to do it.
I will table this item for now and
however you want to do it.
Come back at the next meeting, ask to have that brought back at the next meeting. All right, the next item on the agenda is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, item number 7, the extended school year summer programs. I'm sorry, who asked that this
I
be
did.
Brought? Mr. Spence? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I had some questions. In our pre-K program that we do over at Willowwood, how many students do we see that we're going to serve?
At Willowwood?
Yeah, isn't our pre-K program?
All right, go ahead.
It's at Willowwood, isn't it?
Special Education Preschool.
Yeah, isn't it? It's at Willowwood, right?
Special Education Preschool.
Yeah. Have we been able to track kids over time in that program to see what kind of impact that it's been able to have, having that early intervention, before they even attend kindergarten? Have we been able to do that?
Ms. Valentine?
Well, you may want to pull that microphone closer to you, if you would, please.
Mrs. Lawson is here this evening, and I may refer to her. But I will say that the district operates two preschool programs for special education students at Willowwood throughout the school year.
Mm-hmm.
So this extended year program
is part of that.
Does that. Mm-hmm. It extends their school year.
Right.
I think probably Mrs. Lawson can better respond to your question about long-term impact that program has on special education students.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, it would be great to get that question ahead of time so that she can go back and look at student profiles, unless you just want a generic, general answer, and I'm sure she can do that. Would you like
and
just
if there's
generic
information that you want to send later, that's fine too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Ms. Lawson, can you?
It doesn't matter. I think.
Would you get up and speak to the microphone, would you please?
Typically, the students who are in the program, some go on to continue in an STC program, some go on to general education without supports, some go on to general education with supports. So there's really a wide range of what happens with those students. So the early intervention supports their needs at that time, and it just depends on, you know, how extensive the needs are as they move up. So we look at every one of those students as they're advancing and determine what supports they need when they go beyond the program.
Have we been able to compare it with other programs by other districts in this area at all?
I think that would be sort of challenging because what you have in there is a variety of eligibility areas. So students, I don't know how you would match that exactly with other programs. I have not spent time with another director and sat down and said, you know, how many of your kids go on, how many go on to general ed, because programs vary, eligibilities vary, so, you know, it would be.
When school services did the report that we talked about last week, they had kind of averages, you know, and they said this mm-hmm. one's a little bit above average, this one's a little bit below, you know, and of course I said, well, you know, everybody can't be average. You know, is it statistically outside, the norm? You know, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of what I was looking at. You know, and I don't know, have we been, school services didn't really address that with at the pre-K program. So I was just kind of get an idea, is what we're doing, you know, about what everybody else doing, are we doing it better, you know, or are we statistically outside the norm?
Well, I'm not sure what the norm is, but what we are is compliant with the law. So we provide the services that students need depending on their eligibility, and I assume that other districts strive to do the same thing. So that's kind of our goal. It is our goal. So we do that. We do it according to legally compliant, you know, mandates, and we move students further along in terms of being able to be supported in general education. So other districts, in terms of how their program looks, is that what you're saying, or
what types of supports? Yeah, and the outcomes and those kinds of things. Is there something, you know, that we're doing that's different that has produced a different result, you know, better, you know, than other districts? You know, is there something, you know, that's what I'm kind of looking at. Is there something unique? I understand the compliance with the law because, of course, you know, that's what we want.
Right.
You know, so I'm just trying to figure out, you know, is there something different, you know, out there that we should take a look at, you know, that would comply with the law but also benefit, you know, the kids long term by having this kind of early intervention? Because obviously the earlier you have these interventions, the better.
Right. And
if you have these interventions later, you know, it's fine, but it's not as good as having them early on.
Right. And I think over the time that we've been looking at this in the last 4 years, we've sought to make improvements all along. And so recently we did the MOU with Head Start. So we have integration with typical peers. So we're constantly looking at the program and saying, how can we support these students better? What additional supports can we bring in, methodologies, curriculum, materials? So that we're constantly seeking to do that. How it compares with another program, I think the programs probably vary out there. But I don't know. We can certainly try to get statistics if that might be helpful. I'm very pleased with our program, but I think we continue need to look at that and see what areas we can expand and improve.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I did have a second, on a, not special ed, but a second question. So I don't know how you want
on this same item.
On the same item, but it's not the pre-K program.
On the other one of the other programs.
And I don't know if.
All right. No, I'll just let's entertain anybody else. Any conversation? Questions on
the summer school extended school year or the preschool program is driven by the individual child's IEP needs, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's you are definitely meeting the goals and objectives set for those individual children within those programs.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so all individually based.
Driven.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Spence, did you have anything? I'm sorry.
No. I just had a question, and you know, and it's something that we talked about briefly when we had the policies dealing with educational technology, and just that there is opportunities now to customize and individualize people's students' education through technology. And I didn't know, you know, we do the Mount SAT courses at the high school level and things like that, but there are other possible programs that could be done online, you know, in combination maybe with things going on at the high school that I would like to see if we could look at to broaden the kind of course offerings that we can do. We had done that earlier with APs, because there was a system to use AP advanced placement classes, you know, where we didn't have one teacher to teach, you know, there weren't 30 kids or 40 kids interested in one particular topic. And I just don't know if that we can't apply that to all our students and give them the opportunity to do that, you know, through the high school or in the high school setting during summer school, if, you know, if we could find a way to take a look at that. Now, I don't know how that would affect the funding models because of the way the funding is directed for, you know, for summer school. But, you know, that may be something that doesn't cost a lot, too, that we may be able to individualize some of that and customize some of that.
As the board knows, we did read 180, which has individualized for special education.
Yeah.
So you're looking at something like that.
But not even necessarily remedial, but, I mean, just, you know, as offerings for students.
First offering. Okay.
Yeah, especially, you know, at the 9-12, you know, there's so many different online opportunities out there that I don't know if there's something that we can use that would complement what we already offer either during the summer or during the school year to give, you know, different opportunities to kids to kind of customize and individualize, you know, the kinds of things that they're interested in. You know, I understand there may be a funding issue because, again, the way summer school is funded. But, again, it may not cost that much to make those kind of opportunities available. That's all.
All right. Anything else? Mm-hmm. All right. Is there a motion on this item, please? Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Been moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cami Polis, to approve the 2011 extended school year summer programs as listed. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes 5-0. All right, that then now takes us to items number 17 and 18, a little bit out of order, so we can accommodate the professionals in the house. And we thank them most definitely for taking the time to be here this evening. Do you want to introduce them first?
Would you like to first address the developer fee issue?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Really, we just want to answer any questions that the board has. As you know, Mr. Spence asked for this item to be agendized for discussion, and there was some information provided to you regarding our developer fee process as it stands now, and we also gave you some information as to what would it take to change that process. So if you have questions, actually our general counsel Trevin Sims has a lot of experience in facilities and in this area, and he can assist us with answering any of your questions.
Mr. Sims, how are you, sir?
Welcome, Mr. Sims.
Good. Good evening.
Nice to see you again.
Are there any general questions for me?
You want to go first?
Well, I had a question, and when I looked at this, you know, I had mentioned when I first brought this up a month ago that the Anaheim School District does defer fees, and I don't know what process they use. But my understanding was they use some kind of process that still requires the city to sign off that those fees have been paid before they get the before they can get the certificate of occupation.
Okay. I'm not familiar with the process that Anaheim uses internally, but again, for some broader context, because I don't know how much discussion there was about what's going on generally with the deferral of these developer fees, but since the downturn in the economy, we've gotten a lot more requests of school districts as well as other public agencies to either reduce, defer, or even sometimes waive applicable fees. In the case of the school districts, it's your developer fee. Most often, I see it in terms of residential fees. I think with your district, I understand that the experience is generally more industrial commercial. But you know, we've seen the request. As you know, under the law, you have the right to apply these fees and collect them. Ordinarily, they're paid at the time that the developer goes in, or the contractor goes in for pulling the building permit. And there's a system in place for the city to go through their checklist as to what fees have been paid to the respective agencies, including the school district. The process issue here is that there's not necessarily any particular infrastructure for doing that where the collection of the fee is deferred to occupancy. The addition, and that's just sort of a process issue. The legal issue is, you know, if you defer that fee, is the district placed at greater risk of actual collection of that fee? For example, if the developer should go bankrupt at the time of the certificate of occupancy and doesn't collect, can this? There's one question as to whether the city, if challenged, can legally deny the developer the certificate of occupancy, since by statute the developer fee is triggered and tied to the building permit. You know, in the interim period, if you defer, of course, the district is not collecting interest or earning interest on that money as you would if it was paid at the time of building permit. You know, we've had a number of requests of this sort. In my experience, and I think some of the other attorneys in my office and as well as other school district attorneys that do this sort of work, most districts have not deferred or reduced. There oftentimes are discussions about whether or not the developer is going to provide some other sort of security to protect the district in the event that if the fee is deferred, if somehow the developer can't pay, that the district has an alternative means of collecting that money, like a letter of credit, some sort of performance or other bond, or some other form of security from the developer. Practically, most often, you know, they don't want to do that. So, you know, those are the legal issues. And, of course, whether or not you want to do it, you certainly have the authority to do it, and that really becomes a policy issue for the board.
You know, there was a time, you know, this isn't the first economic downturn we had, and there was an economic downturn where there was a developer where they had bought property and were developing it, and they had financing issues, just like I'm sure many developers have now. I think that's one of the big problems is there's no credit, there's no that kind of stuff. And we actually, the board, we made an agreement with him that they would pay the developer fees when, you know, at this particular time. And then when we did get the money, the development got built because it was a cash flow, you know, credit crunch issue. And so that's why, you know, I keep thinking that if there's a developer looking at, you know, a certain amount of things, trying to do the math, and they can't get credit and they can't get, you know, cash flow, you know, they won't build the project. But, you know, right when it's about to be occupied and they're about to start making return on their investment, you know, they'll find a way to make sure that all the fees are paid in order to get the certificate of occupancy. Because that's when they're going to start making their money back.
Yeah.
You know, you don't make any money if it's not occupied.
Yeah. Well, so, from a business perspective and evaluating the business issues, which I think is the point you're raising, my experience, it makes a big difference whether it's a residential development versus a commercial or industrial builder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dealing with a number of requests where, for example, they have a community facilities district overlay, and they're trying to reduce the special taxes or adjust those in some way because they feel we can't sell these homes unless we can reduce the special tax. You can make an argument that, well, the reason you can't sell the home is not necessarily because of the special tax, or it's not necessarily the major item. You know, one question is, okay, what adjustment has that builder or developer made in terms of their profit margin in other ways? So if they're asking a public agency to reduce their fee or defer it and incur that risk, a fair question that I think a number of districts are asking is, okay, if you want us to share this pain with you, sort of give us what you're doing on your part of this. And then there's a question of, well, how much does really deferring the fee in this way spur and help improve the economic development? I think there's probably a better case for it in the residential context than in a commercial or industrial, but I think the empirical data is that there's no one that has really demonstrated that the reduction or deferral of the developer fees, even in the residential context, is going to or has driven development or improved the economic situation.
Now, there are cities, though, that more cities have been deferring fees, though.
Yeah,
I think coming up, but cities have been deferring a lot of fees like that.
Yeah, I think in the city context, we see it more. I don't really deal much with cities. I could go and find out from some of my colleagues who are city attorneys what their experience is in the city context. But I think generally they are doing more deferrals and other things. You know, but one thing that you have there with the city is the city's better able to track it because they're the one processing both the building permit and the occupancy.
Yes, it was my understanding that's what they were doing in Anaheim, that they were still processing the permit in Anaheim, but I guess I have to check and
I don't know.
Check, but I check the mechanism.
Anything else? Anybody? No?
Okay. So, what I'm hearing you say is that we would be at risk of collecting money at all, possibly. Like right now, we get $41,000. We might be at risk of not receiving funds.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much comes down to a bird in hand is worth two in the bush. Getting the money at building permit certainly is better for the district than deferring one, two, three, whatever years it is before until they get the house built and are at occupancy.
Mr. Spence had spoken to waiving the fees in one case. Could you take it if a developer came and pled his case to you? Can you take it on a case-by-case basis that way? And
for one developer, say, and you said ask the question, what have you done first? And do that on case by case, or do you have to have a standard the way you deal with all developers?
My position and recommendation would be that there be a pretty well thought through standard and evaluation process that you apply to all developers. You know, one argument, if you waive it for one developer, mm-hmm. or you reduce it, even reduce it for one developer or defer it for one developer and don't for another, then at a minimum they could possibly challenge that decision as arbitrary and capricious.
Okay.
If there wasn't a set standard.
I'm sorry?
If there wasn't a set standard or something.
If there wasn't a set standard, or even if there's not a set standard, if the district can't establish a reasonable good faith basis for treating one differently than the other.
Anything else?
Well, one thing.
Ms. Shoemaker.
You touched on it briefly, but when it comes to a city deferring the developer fees, you did say that they do have more control. I can think of a development right here in West Covina that actually was residential, where the Planning Commission did not want to approve because the funding behind the proposed planning housing division was not on steady ground. It took the city council eventually overturned it, but it took years for the development to come in, so that would have delayed developers' fees to the school district for years if we waited till final occupancy finally happened. And since we don't have that control that the city does in terms of approving the projects, I think it would probably be best that we don't defer getting our fees, especially when you run into a situation where shaky financing means they go bankrupt, which means we get into an issue of whether or not we can even collect if somebody buys the property.
Yeah. I mean, that is an issue. And even where, for example, it's paid at building permit, if that permit expires, they don't build or other things, under the statute, they're entitled to request a refund. There are a whole host of issues as to when and who you pay that to that I won't get into now. But, I mean, even where you get it paid at building permit, under the circumstance you have, you could be facing the issue of having to sort of give that money back. So,
would you just real briefly go into what the fundamental basis for charging developer fees was, and that kind of give us a little bit of a background on that?
Well, fundamentally, it is there's a whole line of cases that came out, and then on what fees a school district could charge or impose for the impact that development has on school facilities.
Mm-hmm.
The notion is that, as you know, for residential development, you're able to charge one particular fee, and I think the level one developer fee is $2.70 now. For industrial commercial, you're entitled to charge, I think it's maybe 47 cents, somewhere in there. The notion is that, well, when you build a home in a community, that home is estimated to generate so many children. You as a school district have to have a space for that child. And so it was a compromise between the legislature and, frankly, the building community and other constituencies to adapt this statutory scheme that permitted the school districts to impose fees. It's not stated this way in the statutory scheme, but practitioners have come up with what they call level one, level two, and level three fees. The level one fee is set by the legislature and is adjusted every 2 years. Level two fee is an additional bump that you can impose if, through doing a certain analysis, you can demonstrate that the projected impact on your district in terms of student generation is going to be so much given what you have in capacity right now. Mm-hmm. So you can charge an extra fee. And then there's level three fees, which we never ran into yet, don't think we will, where there's not state funding available, and you show that you have this additional need for fees.
Yeah.
And so the whole purpose was to come up with an agreed-upon scheme that set a standard by which districts could impose fees, and so that there was some consistency in how that was done from city to city and district to district.
So a $41,000 fee that, and that would have been a one-time fee that we'd get. Is that
that's
accurate?
Total, right? That's
well,
total.
It depends. It depends on the level of development. So I think last year you collected about $41,000.
Right.
That could have been from one development. That could have been from hundreds. It could have been partially residential. Could have been industrial, commercial. I don't know the components of it.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, our facilities and space, I mean, it's not like we're going out to, you know, the further east with new developments and needing to have space available for entire schools that are going to be built, and the developers, you know, have a responsibility to their residents, for instance, you know, to provide the schools, and this is one way that that's done on a large-scale basis. We're fairly well developed in West Covina and also developed with respect to the schools, space available for schools. How do developer fees now go? Is there any restrictions on what we can use the money for?
Yeah, there are limits on what it can be used for. The idea is for new construction, site acquisition, or modernization. So a district like yours, I think it's largely going to be modernization of facilities, needed rehabilitation, or certain expansion of facilities. Mm-hmm. So to the extent, like, for example, if you have a five-year plan where you have certain modernization projects or expansion projects, developer fees typically could be used for those as long as you show a sufficient nexus between the need for the project and the development.
All right. Any other questions?
Well, how does that work
Mr. Spence?
With individual homeowners who are just adding on? Because they end up, after 500 square feet, right, they have to pay a developer fee on that, correct?
Yeah, there are a couple of things that could apply for an individual homeowner. As you noted, there's an exception for additions less than 500 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
There are exceptions where perhaps they're tearing down the structure and rebuilding a structure within a certain, you know, square footage of the old structure. And then there are a whole other laundry list of exceptions for like senior housing and mobile homes and things like that. But generally where you see it with individual homeowners is where they're doing an addition and whether or not it adds more or less than 500 square feet.
And are there school districts that provide relief for that?
What's that?
Are there districts that have provided relief for individual homeowners that are adding onto their home? Because that's much different than a developer who's developing a residential complex or a commercial complex, you know.
Yeah, I really don't have any data on individual. Where we've been dealing with the request is where it's, you know, a larger or smaller developer, somebody whose business is building mm-hmm. homes or industrial commercial complexes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
I would like to see some of that information from the city stuff, though, if you ask your city folks.